Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, good Monday afternoon to each and every one of you, wherever you might be out there in Stand in the Gap country. And on behalf of Sam Rohr and David Kistler, I'm Gary Dahl, and we want to welcome you very, very much to this particular program. We always are thankful for your presence, and we just count it a great privilege to be able to come into your life 5 days a week with the issues of the day and doing what we can to bring the Word of God and the United States Constitution to bear upon those issues. And, of course, consistently, there are a lot of things for us to talk about on this program. And this program is dedicated to keeping you, our listeners, informed so that you can act in an appropriate way from the biblical and the constitutional perspective. And one of the things that we do want to highlight probably throughout the course of this week is the fact that this coming Thursday is the National Day of Prayer in the United States of America, a time when Christians all across this nation need to be involved in praying for our country. And those who put together the National Day of Prayer also encourage us to consider Wednesday as a day of repentance, personal and national repentance. We don't see that emphasized too much as it relates to the National Day of Prayer event. But it is nevertheless something that the organizers speak of. And so, pastors, if you are going to be putting together any type of an effort on the National Day of Prayer, you also might want to include Wednesday as a day for national and personal repentance and confession of sin and getting right with God, so that as we go into the National Day of Prayer, we might be able to truly not just go through the motions of prayer, but really be able to reach into God's throne of grace. And Sam, I'm wondering, the National Day of Prayer has been around a long time, and it just seems as though almost every president from George Washington up to where we are today, maybe less today than it has been up to the Obama administration, but most presidents have called for National Days of Prayer even before there was a particular day set aside for National Day of Prayer. I wonder, Sam, what do you think is the significance of this for our nation today in 2015 in which we live?
Gary, I think the significance is the very same significance as was reflected by those who first settled here, the pilgrims, who came, who upon departure from that ship, after many of them had lost their lives, they were coming to this new world, they knelt and they dedicated in prayer this venture, this new experience here to God, knowing that it would never survive unless they had His blessing. So starting from that point in time to coming here to Pennsylvania, that played a very critical role, obviously, with the signing of the Declaration of Independence and all of that in Philadelphia, with William Penn, who made it very, very clear that a nation had to be bathed in prayer. When the Constitution was signed in Philadelphia, it was Benjamin Franklin, not known for his religiosity, after they could not come to an agreement, stood to his feet and reminded the people that they had prayed every day in that facility, in that place, during the War for Independence, praying for God's sovereign answering to their prayer, because it was a human impossibility that this fledgling little ragtag army could take on the greatest power of the world, Britain, at that point. And he said, we prayed every day in this setting, and now we get about the business of starting a new country and actually putting together a constitution. He said, and we haven't even prayed since we've been here. And we argue and we fight. We need to pray. And so he said, I submit that we bow our heads in prayer and ask God to help us in our forward advances. And, of course, that established the reason why Congress's sessions of Congress in the state legislatures are opened in prayer. So, Gary, I say that from the very, very beginning, established by tradition, by key political leaders and pastors, certainly, this country was founded upon people's knees in prayer, and that's what prayer really symbolize. It symbolizes that we didn't get what we have because of our prowess or ability, but we got what we have. We have been blessed because what God has done for us. It's an attitude that is communicated when we pray, and the failure to pray, Gary, is a demonstration of pride and arrogancy, which God frankly hates. So it's really a reflection. Do we need God? And if we do, then let's demonstrate it, and certainly prayer is where we begin.
Well, I appreciate that, and I agree with you 100%. David, I want to ask you, do you think that we have lost the reality of prayer in America today, not only in government, but also even in the church and in the life of the Christian? You know, it's often been said that the prayer meeting of the local church is the least attended service of the church throughout the course of the week. But it just seems like in every level, in the home, in government, and in the church, which of course represent God's three institutions, that we in recent years have substituted man's thoughts, ideas, opinions, and philosophies rather than seeking God's direction through prayer. So would you agree with that? And have we lost the reality of prayer in America today?
Gary, I think we have. I think we now view prayer as a last resort rather than a first resort. You know, when we get ourselves into such a dilemma that we can no longer find a human solution, then we will turn to God and seek His wisdom as a last resort rather than something we should be doing initially. And I think it would be important that we share a little bit about the history of what will take place this coming Thursday, the official National Day of Prayer commemoration. It began in 1952, signed into law by President Harry S. Truman. And let me read actually from his proclamation in June of 1952, or July, excuse me, of 1952, he said, and I'm quoting, "Whereas from the earliest days of our history, our people have been accustomed to turn to Almighty God for help and guidance. And whereas in times of national crisis, when we are striving to strengthen the foundations of peace and security, we stand in special need of divine support. And whereas the Congress, by a joint resolution, approved in April of 1952, a set day other than Sunday as a national day of prayer on which the people of the United States may turn to God in prayer and meditation." And then he goes on and talks more about the specifics of his proclamation. But Gary, think of this, 1952, that's not that long ago. And our president, Harry S. Truman, was acknowledging how much we need God at the beginning, not as a last resort. And now we have, tragically, people in the highest office of the lands, including even the White House, where, Gary, our president has expelled the National Day of Prayer commemoration from the White House. It's now held in the Cannon Office Building. And at very best, all our president has done, he's never shown up to one of these National Day of Prayer events. He always sends, at the very most, a paper resolution, you know, stating, you know, some kind of statement about it. But Gary, that's arrogance in the extreme that you alluded to, or that Sam alluded to earlier. So yes, we need to come back to a place of acknowledging God first and foremost, not as a last resort.
Well, Thursday is National Day of Prayer, and ladies and gentlemen, I would encourage you to be preparing to repent and then to pray for this nation. We need prayer for America today more than ever before. You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. We will be back with more right after this, so stay tuned. We've got some good information for you.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing, as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
Selling 1 million copies a year for over 100 years, McGuffey's readers were the mainstay of public education in America. Millions of school children read them, making them some of the most influential textbooks of all times. They were written by William McGuffey, who died this day, May 4, 1873. He was a professor at the University of Virginia, president of Ohio University, and formed one of the nation's first teachers' associations. A lesson in McGuffey's Fifth Eclectic Reader stated, "How powerless conscience would become without the belief of a God."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
God says that when nations become proud and forsake Him, He'll replace their servant leaders with self-serving infantile leaders. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, saying there's a heavy price to pay for forsaking God. Isaiah chapter 3 says, "And I will give children to be their political rulers, and babes shall rule over them." The Bible goes on to say that these rulers may have adult bodies, but like little children, they have selfish hearts and short-sighted minds. Undisciplined and driven by their flesh, they encourage division and rebellion, disrespect to parents and those in authority, and lawlessness and crude behavior against those who are decent and honorable. Like the inhabitants of Sodom, they act like children, arrogant, selfish, and openly flaunting their sin. Yet God says their behavior and their countenance will testify against them and will reward evil to themselves and the nation they represent. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, asking you if you can identify baby rulers so you don't act like one or vote for one.
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
Without God, liberty will not last. A quote from Thomas Jefferson.
As stated by Edmund Burke, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
In 1778, George Washington said in Valley Forge, "If having pleased the Almighty Ruler of the universe to defend the cause of the United States, and finally to raise up a powerful friend among the princes of the earth, to establish our liberty and dependence upon a lasting foundation, it becomes us to set apart a day of gratefully acknowledging the divine goodness and celebrating the important event which we owe to His divine interposition. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land." 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Stand in the Gap Today. And along with Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl. And, you know, it just seems like, Dave and Sam, every time you turn around, there's another shooting about something going on in this nation of ours. And, of course, there were several of them over the weekend, if you all followed the news. Actually, three or four different ones from almost coast to coast here in the United States of America. But one that seemingly is at the forefront of the others is the fact that there were two killed outside a cartoon contest, as it is slated to be, down in Garland, Texas, yesterday. And what we find is that the American Freedom Defense Initiative had been hosting a contest for the best cartoon depicting the Prophet Muhammad. And, of course, as we understand, this particular organization, the American Freedom Defense Initiative, was going to award $10,000 for the best cartoon depicting the Prophet Muhammad. Well, allegedly, this got a couple of folks sort of up in arms about it, and it appears as though there was a shooting that took place outside this particular place where the contest was being held. Some of the authorities have not yet come out to say specifically that it relates to that particular contest, but it seems as though there are some connections between the shooter and Islam that the folks are checking into that actually would appear as though that the shooter was really reacting to what was going on in this particular contest. The lady who leads the American Freedom Defense Initiative is a person by the name of Pamela Geller. And, of course, she, along with Geert Wilders, who is a Dutch lawmaker known for his outspoken criticism of Islam, were the main speakers at this particular gathering in Garland, Texas, yesterday. And as a matter of fact, Wilders said, and I quote, Muhammad fought and terrorized people with the swords. Today, here in Garland, we fight Muhammad and his followers with a pen. And the pen, the drawings, will prove mightier than the sword, end quote. That was quite a statement. And it's interesting to note, Sam, that Pamela Geller told the Associated Press before yesterday's events that she planned this contest to make a stand for free speech in America in response to the outcries and violence over other drawings of Muhammad. Of course, we know that Islam does not really appreciate these cartoons drawings of Muhammad. We've seen them react to that in the past. So my question to you today, Sam, on this particular issue is, well, maybe it's twofold. Number one, is this an appropriate way to stand for freedom of speech in America today? And number two, do you think that this type of a thing really is supported, that is, the shootings, is something that would be supported by ISIS and other Islamic radicals across the nation and around the world?
Well, Gary, answer your first question first. Is this the kind of thing that is supported by First Amendment rights? And the answer is absolutely is. The ability to be able to express one's opinion relative about anything, even of this type, is a First Amendment protected right. Now, whether or not I would have chosen to do that, I don't think I necessarily would have. I think there are other ways. I mean, although we talk of right now, I mean, she was saying that she was doing that to express opposition to the efforts of Islam and so forth, and in that the pen actually did not engage picking up the sword as ISIS does, and as Islam ultimately recommends picking up the sword. She was going to pick up the pen. All right. Well, that frankly is a proper use of that. So to that extent, the answer is that yes. Now, is it the kind of thing? Are the two individuals that that attacked? Is it possible that they were associated with ISIS or Islam? I think that's coming out. But certainly we know from historic actions that that is, in fact, something that they believe that they must do in order to protect the honor of Muhammad. Same thing had happened over in France. So, yes, it's very likely. I wouldn't be surprised if, in fact, we find out that they were directly related. But it is something that they do. And they, unfortunately, they will pick up the sword, as you saw there, to combat what is, in effect, the use of a pen. And I think that's fairly indicative.
David Kistler, are we losing the freedom of speech in America today?
Gary, I believe we are. And again, I want to follow up on what Sam said. I think he said it very, very eloquently. This is not necessarily something I would choose to do, to be that provocative, you know, to have a contest. However, having said that, it is certainly First Amendment protected speech. And to me, it's very, very interesting. There has been a convergence over the weekend down there in Garland, Texas, over two of our most precious liberties, and that is our First Amendment liberties and our Second Amendment liberties. And I'm talking about freedom of speech as well as the right to keep and bear arms. And I have complete confidence, knowing Texans as I know them, because I am married to one. Had these police officers not taken these two individuals down, some Texan who had a legal right to carry a weapon would certainly have done so. But Gary, I do believe we're losing our First Amendment liberties in a dramatic way. And I think Islam is a major proponent of limiting our First Amendment liberties, because they don't want anybody saying anything, doing anything that would be in any way dishonoring to the Prophet Muhammad. By the way, Mr. Wilders, the Dutch lawmaker, the Muslim community did their best to prohibit him from coming to America for this event. They try to keep him from coming because they didn't want him to say anything negative about Islam. And so if we allow that, if we allow this kind of incursion into our First Amendment liberties, we will do it to our own demise as a nation. First Amendment liberty, Gary, is the first liberty. It's the first liberty. It's the most precious one. Freedom of speech, religion, press, assembly, right to petition our government for redress of grievances. All of those are tied up in that First Amendment, and it's the most precious liberties we have.
It's interesting to note that one of the suspects in the shooting was known to the United States intelligence and had been a part of a recent terror investigation of allegedly trying to travel to Africa, which is, of course, the home of the Al-Qaeda-linked militant group Al-Shabaab. And so, you know, there is at least some type of a connection there. And Sam, the question that I have for you is, do we need to become more and more concerned about this type of a thing happening in the United States of America? I mean, you know, we talk about what is going on as it relates to terror over in foreign countries, over in the Middle East and so forth and so on. But when it comes to, let's say, our freedom of speech, speaking against Islam, which we do know that many are doing today. We just had a conference on Islam at the church that I pastor, now Tuna, Pennsylvania. More and more pastors are speaking up on these issues. Is this the type of a thing that we can expect, that when Islam is being dealt with, that there would be those who would be put forth an effort to terrorize us? And if so, how can we guard against that?
Answer, Gary, the answer to that is absolutely yes, unequivocally. And why do I say it? Because they say it, and they do it as a religion. It demands it of those who practice the religion. They have threatened us regularly, from the centers in the Middle East to all of these different renegade versions of Islam, of which ISIS is a part. They have threatened our death and destruction. They have threatened to bring it to our homeland. They did it in 9/11. They have attempted many such cases across the country, fortunately, that have been thwarted up to this point. But there have been some that have been actuated. So the answer is absolutely yes. Now, what should we do to protect ourselves? Well, we must, as a very basis, the American people must learn and understand what that ideology is all about. When they make a claim, expect that they will attempt to carry it out. And how do you protect against it? By understanding the ideology and the principles that undergird our freedom, and the fact that our system of government, our definition of justice, our whole participatory form of government, our whole concept of self-government is an antithesis, the exact opposite of that ideology. The two cannot compete. So we must understand it. We must oppose it. We must articulate our biblical positions that underpin our freedoms, and be aggressive in putting it forth and teaching our children and our grandchildren what it all means, because this is where it's going to be won or lost.
You know, we really do not know if Pamela Geller is a born-again Christian. I mean, I don't know about that. Do you folks? I mean, Sam or Dave, have you heard anything about her faith or her religion?
I do
Gary,
not.
I have not. Maybe Sam has, but I have not.
And you haven't either, Sam?
I have not either, Gary, so it's that we don't know about her at this moment.
The reason why I ask that is, according to the information we have, when a Chicago-based nonprofit held a January fundraiser in Garland designed to help Muslims combat negative depictions of their faith, Geller spearheaded about 1,000 picketers in an event in which one of them said, "Go back to your own countries. We don't want you here." They, of course, were saying that towards the Muslims. And so apparently this lady has been very actively involved with the American Freedom of Defense Initiative and is doing what she can to rid the United States of America of Muslims. Quite an interesting thought to take into consideration. We will be back with more right after this break, ladies and gentlemen, so stay tuned.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Paul Stevens. A Phoenix apartment being searched by the FBI after two gunmen were killed last night outside a suburban Dallas venue hosting a free speech event featuring cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. A law enforcement official telling Fox News one suspect is 30-year-old Elton Simpson, convicted 5 years ago in a terror investigation and given 3 years probation for lying to federal agents about trying to go to Somalia and fight with the African Al-Qaeda affiliate Al-Shabaab. Meantime, more details being released about the gunmen in Sunday's attack.
Both of them had assault rifles, came around the back of the car and started shooting at the police car. The police officer in that car began returning fire and struck both men, taking them down. Both of those men died there on the street next to their car.
Garland, Texas police spokesman Joe Harn, and this is a Fox News alert.
So, thank you for coming to my town hall today and how wonderful Common Core is and how much money we got from the federal government for giving up control of education. Any questions?
So, Representative, we have adopted new National Common Core standards, but they are not higher than our existing standards, and they were never really tested.
Well, yes.
And now we have to retrain all our teachers again and make them teach from a script so they can teach to national tests?
Well, yes.
And buy lots of new computers and equipment and copyrighted lessons from the same people who are promoting Common Core?
Well, yes.
And we're going to share all our private, family, medical, disciplinary, and test results with people nationwide. Why are you supporting it?
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
WFYL. You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Stand in the Gap Today, this Monday edition. And, of course, along with Dave Kistler and Sam Rohr, I'm Gary Dahl. And I just want to go back to complete my thought on the statement that I gave just before we came up against the hard break. And that is that back in January, when a Chicago-based nonprofit held a fundraiser in Garland designed to help Muslims combat negative depictions of their faith, Pamela Geller, who, of course, heads the American Freedom Defense Initiative, spearheaded about 1,000 picketers in an event. And one of the picketers said, quote, "Go back to your own countries. We don't want you here." Another one held up a sign that said, quote, "Insult those who behead others," end quote. And Sam, the question that comes to my mind when I hear of things about this and read things like this is that the way to combat Islam in America today? Telling them to go back to their own countries and that it's okay to insult those who have beheaded others. Is that the right approach?
Well, Gary, that's a very tough question. I must admit, I gotta compliment you for asking very pointed question. I think that's what we try to deal with on this program. But, you know, I would answer it this way. Again, almost like what Dave and I said at the beginning. Would we have done holding this, you know, would we have presided over inviting folks to come and draw cartoons of Muhammad? No, I probably would not. On the other hand, is that permissible under law? Is it a part of First Amendment expression? Yes, it is. In some respects, there are some who do need to do that kind of thing to draw attention. But I think that overall, at the end of the day, perhaps the greatest way is kind of like what we're doing here on this program and elsewhere in saying, now, look at the basis of the ideology. Pull apart the parts that underlie the differences and the distinctives between what that ideology and the connected aspect of law, their Sharia law, how that fights against every piece of law of and what we have in this country. These are the things that underlie and go back, and then ultimately it comes back from a biblical perspective. It comes back to one's view of God. They are pursuing and worshiping a God not of the Bible, but an anti-God, an anti-Christ, and that religion itself and ideology will result in things that will compete against us. Ultimately, it's our governmental system, it's the law here that should prevail to make sure that when there are infractions of the law caused by someone who is a Muslim, who is breaking our law, that they are not coddled, but that swift justice is brought against them. This is the kind of thing that helps to keep that kind of thing in check and balance until a Muslim who might be countered with the biblical truth would understand in their heart and would turn away from Muslim ideology and would turn to Christ. Ultimately, that's the only thing that will produce an ultimate change in heart. But other than that, they are free to do what they're doing, Gary.
Well, they are. And yet it appears, I mean, we're talking about this idea of the freedom of speech. And as both of you men have indicated today, that is really a part of our first freedom here in the United States of America. It's in our First Amendment, the First Amendment to the Constitution. But David Kistler, are there limitations on the freedom of speech? I mean, we often talk about the fine line of distinction in certain things. So is there a fine line of distinction between what we are free to say and what we should not say as we exercise that right?
Well, Gary, there is. You cannot claim First Amendment protection to walk into a crowded theater or a crowded building and yell fire and create havoc and that kind of thing. There's other things you cannot do. You cannot, you know, use your speech to call for the killing of someone and claim First Amendment protection for that, because in doing so, you are then crossing over a line and limiting somebody else's liberty, i.e., in the situations I've given, their liberty to life or their opportunity to have an ability just to live. You can't claim free speech if you're inhibiting somebody else's, you know, rights as well. So, yeah, there are limits, but they have to be very carefully guarded. And in the situation we're talking about, someone standing up and saying to a Muslim, you know, if you're not going to fit into the American system, if you're going to be involved in an attempt to take down the constitutional republic that we have enjoyed here in this country for almost 239 years, if you want to see Sharia law be the law of the land instead of U.S. law, then that is certainly within a person's free speech rights to say those things, if, even to the point of telling them go home. You know, that's a person's free speech rights. Again, I would not necessarily say those things about, you know, someone else needs to go home. But anyway, it's certainly within First Amendment protection. But we have to be very, very careful, Gary. It's a two-edged sword here. And our founders, I think, understood that. But we just need to be very, very careful that in this coddling, as Sam said, of Islam, this attempt to placate the Muslim community, that we don't give away, surrender our precious First Amendment liberty.
Well, and you know, we've talked about this before, and that is the idea that the United States of America was founded on biblical principles. It was not founded on Islamic principles. It was founded on biblical principles. It was not founded on Sharia law. It was founded on God's law. And when you take that into consideration, Sam, how do I want to put it? There appears to be some limitation or restriction, therefore, in how far a Muslim can go to declare certain rights in this nation, correct?
No, you are exactly correct. Now, I want to go back and I'm going to answer that and go back to what Dave just talked about. Let me ask the question this way. Would it be, is it wrong for an American citizen, a patriotic American citizen, to say to some other person who's coming here ostensibly to become an American citizen, to say that when you are here in America, you are welcome. However, you're going to learn to speak English. You're going to learn to abide by our laws. You will be, and you should say, when the flag is taken by, although we can't make you, you should be saying, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. I mean, these are certain basic things. But see, Gary, over the last generation, we've walked away from that. So now you don't need to pledge. Matter of fact, if you don't want to, that's just fine. And speaking English, a common language, well, forget that. We've dropped that a long time ago. Matter of fact, we give benefits that should be reserved to citizens, to non-citizens. Somehow, within this whole thing, Islam and Muslims have factored in. Should we feel bad to say, when you're in America, act like an American? Speak English, you know, that kind of thing? Answer is yes. Then why should we not say to a Muslim, when you're in America, you're welcome to be here, but when you're here, you'd better not be trying to undermine us, violate our law, seek to overturn the freedoms that we currently have, because if you do, then do go back home. This nation is not a nation that can open its arms to everybody to do anything that they want, any time they want, according to their own law. Otherwise, you have no more nation. This nation, as you said, built on biblical principles. We have a system of law. You must follow that law. So within this whole thing, I think, has been so mixed up, Gary and Dave, that ultimately many citizens feel like they feel guilty if they say, you ought to act and think like an American. And certainly for many in our own government, they try to discourage that kind of patriotic sense. And that's just frankly dead wrong, and it's dangerous for the continuity of our own nation.
Well, I agree.
Well, it is. And you know, if we who are Christians would go over to some Muslim country, we really wouldn't have the freedom to act like a Christian, would we? Or an American, would we, Sam?
Well, no, Gary, the answer is very clearly no. I mean, they're losing their heads. Here in America, those who say go back home are not taking Muslims out and cutting their heads off. You go to a Muslim country, they are, though, lining up Christians and others who are not there and cutting their heads off. It's two different, totally different approaches. So, frankly, you could say, if you don't want to be an American, go back home. By comparison, that's very mild, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, of course, you know, the thing that we need to understand, ladies and gentlemen, according to the writings of Islam, their desire, their goal, their worldview is to overtake the world, to see that this whole world is converted to Islam. And so that's their worldview. That's what they are out to do. And seemingly many people really don't understand that. I've often said that the best way to combat Islam is, number one, learning about Islam, whether it's reading the Quran or the Sharia or whatever, but learn about Islam and then share your faith with those who are Muslims. Share your faith with everybody. I mean, you know, the Bible teaches us that as Christians, we are to lead people to Christ. We are to go into all the world and preach the gospel. And I've often said that the more people come to Christ, the less difficulties we would have in our nation, no matter what circumstance that you're talking about, whether it's Islam or atheism or whatever. We'll be back with more discussion here on Stand in the Gap today. Stay tuned.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America, using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. It was a little bit more than a year ago that I attended the Supreme Court oral arguments in the Conestoga Wood Hobby Lobby case involving the rights of Christian business owners not to be forced to provide insurance coverage for abortion-causing drugs. As I listened that day, I was shocked to hear the U.S. Solicitor General say that it was the position of the Obama administration that employers could legally be forced to pay for their employees' abortion in direct violation of their faith. Well, in last week's Supreme Court arguments on redefining marriage, that same Obama administration lawyer indicated that if same-sex marriage is imposed by the court, Christian universities and schools could very well lose their tax-exempt status if they refuse to go along. So much for those who said same-sex marriage would not impact our First Amendment liberty. Find out more about us at the Pennsylvania Family Institute at pafamily.org.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. That's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me, whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at stoptextstoprex.org.
Hi, this is Carla Dedessi, author of the Julia Learns book series and host of Your Family Matters here at 1180 WFYL. Let's make 2015 the year that we read quality books to our children, the future leaders of this country. Please start with my book series, Julia Learns How to Vote Wisely and Julia Learns How to Marry Wisely. Julia Learns How to Vote Wisely is instructing our children to vote with conservative values and the importance of planting those seeds deeply into our children's hearts at an early age. Julia Learns How to Marry Wisely is planting seeds deeply for truth and nobility and righteousness that we see in traditional marriage. They are the only books that are sharing this message with our children, the future leaders of the United States of America. And please keep a lookout for a third book that will be launched this April 2015, Julia Learns How to Protect Life Wisely. Remember, today's readers are tomorrow's future leaders.
The Julia Learns series can be purchased as ebooks, printed books, and on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other Christian retailers.
Hi, this is Nancy Becker, the Recorder of Deeds in Montgomery County. I'd like to read a quote from Mark Twain. In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, and brave, and hated, and scorned. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, and then it costs nothing to be a patriot.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website. AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being there. Dave and Sam, there seems to be a common phrase now that is sounding very, very clearly and loudly among a number of GOP individuals, and that is, I am running for the presidency of the United States of America. Just today, Ben Carson is making that statement, has made that statement, that he's running for the presidency. Carly Fiorina is announcing that she is running for the presidency of the United States of America. We understand that tomorrow Mike Huckabee is going to announce that he's running for the presidency of the United States of America. And the interesting thing about it is that a number of these people claim to be born-again Christians, which is something, of course, that I rejoice in. Now, I'm not saying that Ben Carson has said that. Maybe he is. I don't know. Dave, I know you've met him. I know you've spoken with him. Certainly, I do not know anything about Carly Fiorina as it relates to her faith. But let me just ask you, Dave, in talking with Ben Carson, is he a born-again man?
Well, Gary, that I don't know. I know he professes, or he would probably profess, to be a believer of some sort. But to be honest with you, I am not 100% convinced that he is. However, he is a great man. And let me say what I mean by that. He is a very humble man. In fact, when you're around him, and my wife and I and son were able to share dinner with him, it will be a year ago in August. When you're around him, he seems almost uncomfortable in a social setting. He's just so humble. He's so unassuming, which is a wonderful trait. It's a rare trait you see in someone that's going to be running for public office much these days. But anyway, he's a very humble man. He's a very knowledgeable man. He's a man of impeccable character. I can say that. And, I watched his announcement today. I found it to be very, very interesting. It was very well done, very professionally done, and yet done in a kind of a down home kind of way, which is just the way he communicates. And he speaks with such reason, such wisdom, that I think, gentlemen, he may end up being more of a power player candidate than maybe many are giving him credit for potentially being. But I think he will elevate the discourse just by his presence in the race. And he's certainly a man that that people need to take a good, honest look at. But Gary, as far as his faith, I can't say that I'm absolutely convinced he knows Christ as Savior.
The interesting thing is, when you take a look at Ben Carson, he is not politically correct. As a matter of fact, he has suggested that the Affordable Care Act, that is Obamacare, is the worst thing that's happened in the United States of America since slavery. He has also compared present-day America to Nazi Germany, and he's called the problems at the nation's Veterans Affairs hospitals as a gift from God because they revealed holes in the country's effort to take care of veterans. Sam, that's pretty straightforward. Doesn't seem like he's going to beat around any bushes in his campaign.
No, I don't think he will. And I would say what Dave is saying. I think that the one thing that he does is, I think of all the candidates so far, he would be the one that does not have any type of a voting record. Let's put it that way. Some would construe that to be a negative. Because his experience in office is, well, it's not there. It doesn't have any experience in office. On the other hand, the advantage that it brings is that he has not previously probably had himself in politically compromised positions. He certainly is not indebted to the machinery because he's not been a part of it. And that does allow him to speak a bit more free, although all of them were going to be measuring all of them on their ability to speak truth without couching it in some kind of, walking the fence. I mean, this is the time for truth. And so I find that refreshing. I think that Brother Dave may be just right. He may end up being a larger factor to contend with in this growing stable of horses, put it that way, on the Republican side in particular.
I thought the GOP were elephants. Now they're horses.
Well, yeah, Gary, I'm sorry, Sam, but listen, he addressed some of the very things you're talking about, what people would perceive to be his weaknesses as a candidate, the fact that he has very little political experience. In fact, he really has no political experience. He addressed that in his announcement today in a really clear way. He talked about the foundation he started. He talked about how he has some corporate experience there. It's a very successful foundation. He talked about his ability to work through difficult situations. Of course, he's a neurosurgeon. He's a brain surgeon, and he has actually perfected some procedures that have never been done before. He talked about his ability to deal with problems that his skill in that area would reflect. And so, I do believe he's going to be a formidable candidate.
What about, by the way, Sam, your comment about horses and elephants, any further words on that one?
Well, the only reason I said horse is because you generally don't construe a group of elephants to be in a stable ready to run. So I thought.
Yeah, if you can get horses to get in, elephants to get into a stable, you're the man that needs to be running for president.
Oh, you're right.
But, what about Carly Fiorina? Sam, what do we know of her? I understand she did a great job as CEO out there at Hewlett-Packard, but what do we know about her? I heard somebody in a local talk show today say that they met her a couple of years back, and she's a great lady as far as her character and things are concerned. But what about her? Is she a formidable candidate?
I think at this juncture, she's the only woman, right? That means something. Secondarily, coming from corporate experience, for some, that means a great deal. However, here again, I think at the end of the day, a lot of this is going to come down to the ability to be able to demonstrate some kind of firm grasp on at least being able to express the ideological underpinnings that will result itself in public domestic policy or in foreign policy. And I really don't know where she's coming sufficiently. I mean, someone of that dark horse nature has an awful lot to overcome just simply because of the stature and the nature and the visibility of so many of those already out there in front of her, including Ben Carson.
Dave, Sam just can't get away from the horses today. Now we're talking about dark horses.
I'm using that analogy for some reason.
I'll tell you what, the Lone Rangers are coming again, I suppose you could say. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking more and more about the presidential race and throughout these next months and on into 2016, because it's important for us to understand what kind of a person should run for the presidency. And so I would encourage you to stay tuned to Stand in the Gap, because I think that this upcoming presidential election, if it's not the most significant election that we've ever faced in this nation, it's very close. However, I would say it's the number one most serious election that we've ever faced in this country, in my personal opinion. So we want to continue to share with you the biblical qualifications for a president. And you'll just want to be here listening to us as we continue to educate on these particular subjects. Thank you for joining us today. Until tomorrow, stand in the gap for faith and freedom. Keep looking up and remember the best is yet to come.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. we seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.